Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Views podcast for March the 14th, 2022. This is a midweek bonus episode and the fourth of our infrastructure series. On today's show, we are pleased to be joined by Richard Moore from ChargePoint. His official title there is Global Vice President of Fleet. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We may be joined by Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast a bit later. All right. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody. So this is the fourth episode in a series of midweek bonus podcasts centered on charging infrastructure, where we talk to people from different charging networks, utilities, and possibly others to get a sense of where we're at now, where we want to be in the future, and what are the challenges and opportunities involved. So Rich, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are the Global Vice President of Fleet at ChargePoint. I understand that you've been with them for a little over a year now after spending 25 years at Ryder System. That's probably best known for its rental trucks, but it's really like a huge logistics and transportation company that offers a wide variety of services and solutions. So ChargePoint started up in 2007. So it's not only one of the oldest charging infrastructure companies, but I believe it also claims to be the largest. It's not taking the same approach to fast charging as some of the maybe other, you know, bigger companies in the US. So maybe start us off then by telling us a bit more about ChargePoint's story. What's its basic strategy? How many markets you're in? Maybe how many locations you have, the different power levels you offer, and maybe what future growth plan looks like. That's a lot, I know, but just take your time and, you know, tell us about ChargePoint, because it's, I think it feels like it's one of the, like, although it's like the biggest and it's been around long, it's maybe one of the lesser known quantities in the charging infrastructure world.
Yeah, so I think I can give you kind of the USA Today version of ChargePoint to consolidate. So when you look at it from a corporate strategy on how we help our customers make electrification easy. So on the hardware side, we offer a full suite of hardware, all the way from home AC all the way up to high power that you'd use on, you know, your highest power vehicle. So a full array of AC and DC products globally. We also on-ramp and support third-party hardware onto our software. So other charging providers that are OCPP, you know, 1.5 and better, we'll on-ramp that hardware and we'll support those customers. So when you look at it, we're really a vertically integrated company. So we like how our software and our hardware work. We like the feature and functionality that we have on that software. It's purpose-built for our customers based on whether they're retail or their fleet or their commercial or their municipal or their bus. But we also realize that there is choice in the market. So when a customer wants to on-ramp a third-party hardware because they like our software, how it works agnostically across all different types of hardwares, they can do that. So the goal is to be able to support that customer from a software, charger control, that visibility, access, and control, the three things that most fleets, commercial, and bus customers are looking for. Our software does that very nicely across all types of hardware platforms. So we're a North American and European company. So we're headquartered in Campbell, California, just south of San Jose. We have our testing facility, our engineering lab in Campbell, California. Plus, we have a durability, UL testing facility in San Jose. We do all the durability, brake test, shake test, you know, flamethrowers, water spray, freeze, cold, hot, everything on our own equipment for our global hardware strategy. That's done in San Jose, California. It's a great facility. We got some really cool videos if you guys ever want to take a look at it, of us abusing chargers and every scenario you could ever think of. So and the goal really is, you know, the goal really is, from an integrated hardware standpoint, is we feel like the lowest cost of ownership you can get out of charging infrastructure is being able to go through us because of a couple different things. One, because of the level of integration between our hardware and software. Two is around the being able to centrally manage through our support centers, your hardware and your software all in one stack. And our ability to be able to quickly replace parts on that charger without doing a complete rip and replace. So, and I'm really boiling it down, obviously, but when you look at it from a, you know, total cost of ownership, whether you're a retail customer, municipal, or a fleet customer, that hardware, you're making a significant investment in addition to the make ready cost. So when something goes down, you want that to be down for the shortest period of time. So companies are looking for a high service level on their charger to make sure energy is available for their customer. When something does and will break, you know, it is transportation. So things are designed to break in transportation, either by the driver, by the vehicle, or you know, by the hardware. You want to be able to replace that quickly. So we've designed, you know, our design philosophy around our hardware allows you to quickly replace any part of that charger with very low effort and very low qualifications. So I don't need to bring in a master electrician just to replace a charging cable on a charger. So that allows us to be able to support those chargers globally very easily. So when you look at it from, you know, we have global products that work in, you know, North America and Europe. And then we also have our support centers placed throughout the US, Canada, and Europe to be able to support our customers in multiple languages, multiple form factors, being able to support multiple customer types. So we do driver support, which is really important. We do vehicle support, which is very important. And that comes into inoperability of those vehicles, testing those vehicles to make sure they work across all charger types. And then we do station support. So when you look at the three different types of customers that we need to support, there's a heck of a lot of people that go into making sure that all three of those customers get the proper level of support. So a driver needs to be able to charge, and whether that's right behind the fence or in front of the fence. A charger needs to be able to be viewed on what the health of that charger is at all times. So when something does go wrong, we need to be able to see that charger, where it is and what's going on with it. And then on the vehicle side, we need to be able to see how that vehicle is interacting with that charger in different charging situations. So those are kind of the three main areas of support that we do globally for our customers.
So, so ChargePoint, the branding of ChargePoint, yeah, you do have ChargePoint branding on some installations, but a lot of them have, you know, other companies maybe behind, you know, you're like the hardware behind the sign.
Yep.
So what levels of charging do you offer now? Like what power levels can people, because I mean, we're used to Electrify America has like up to 350 kilowatts, but that's not necessarily where you play mostly.
It is. So we on the AC side, we do 7 kW all the way up to 19.5 kW, which is kind of the high end of what you can do on AC.
Right.
So that's kind of your full stack of AC. And then on the DC side, we start at 62.5, which is our CP250 product. And we go all the way up to 350 kilowatts charging and roadmap up to 500 when you look at liquid cool cables. So we do, so half the bus deployments in North America are coming with either ChargePoint software or ChargePoint hardware. And same in Europe. So we do some high power deployments. You know, there was a release on the SFMTA at San Francisco Transit Authority. That's all a high power distributed product. They're charging north of 150 kW with power blocks and power links. So we do have a high power product that goes, you know, all the way up to, you know, we're working on, you know, superchargers right now on, you know, what the upper end of that's going to be like everyone else is. So I think that what you'll see is most of our deployments up until now, where really there weren't any fleet vehicles, you know, we were at that 130 kW paired, which we found to be a really nice slim footprint deployment, you know, across customers where you needed to be able to deploy DC charging.
Right. Because you can't put like a 350 kilowatt, you know, DC fast charger in the parking lot of a Kmart, say if Kmart still existed. You can't necessarily, you know, just plunk down a bunch of, you know, fast chargers right there super easily, but you can, you know, install like a number of, what's the main 125 CPEs?
Yep, the CP250s, yep, which CP250s. Is our 62.5 paired to 130.
Right. Do you want to explain briefly what that means? Like the 62.5 paired, a lot of our viewers might not quite understand the terminology. Break it down for us.
Technology. So essentially two charging stations, into the ground, nothing behind them. All the power conversion happens inside the units itself. Each of those chargers can charge at 62.5. And if only one's being used, you get the full 130 kW through one charger. So it can be used in a methodology, and then we pair those together underground to be able to utilize 100% of that power on one charger or the other. And then we can pair those together. So we'll do multiple sets of CP250s. So essentially you can stand up 130 kW per vehicle. And then in the fleet, in my business, what we do is we use our software to control what energy goes to those vehicles based on the amount of state of charge that they have, what routes they need to make. So I can use that then to distribute the power through our software for a larger fleet. So obviously retail is a little bit of a different situation, right?
Right.
You want to drive up, you want to plug in, you want the car and the charger to communicate, and you want the charge at the maximum power that's available that car will take. On the fleet side of the business, a little bit more planning comes into that because you don't need that vehicle to take 100% of the energy the minute it plugs in. You might use a first in, first out methodology. You might do distributed. You might do sequential. We have a number of different ways to be able to cater that software for our customers behind the fence.
So I want to get one topic out of the way right here in the beginning, because I think a lot of people misunderstand ChargePoint, say, business plan. Unlike networks like EVgo and Electrify America, for instance, ChargePoint doesn't own the equipment anymore. They sell it to the site owners.
Agreed.
Electrify America, EVgo, they make deals with property owners, like Dominic mentioned, Kmart or Walmart, and they install their equipment on the property owner's property, and then they manage it. What ChargePoint does is they go to Walmart and say, hey, would you like to buy these DC fast chargers? We'll manage the back end, collect the money, give you your cut. So the difference with that is, and it's a big difference, because we're getting some questions here in the comment about there's charging stations been broken for a long time. When are you going to fix them? It's not up to ChargePoint to fix them. It's the property owner's property. They buy them and they install them. So sometimes I see comments that say, oh, ChargePoint stinks because, there's a ChargePoint charger down on the corner. It's been broken for 6 months. When are they going to fix it? The thing is, they don't fix it. They will fix it if the property owner calls them and says, this is broken, I need you to come out and fix it. Of course, the property owner has to pay for it. So that's the difference in the networks. ChargePoint has a different business plan. They sell the equipment instead of owning and operating it. So I know that was a long-winded talk here, but it had to be explained, because that's a very big difference between ChargePoint and some of the other big networks that are out there. So I would like Rich to talk a little bit about that business approach and why ChargePoint does that as opposed to owning and operating the equipment. And there's another thing that I want to tack on really quickly. It's part of the reason why there are more ChargePoint level 2 charging stations out there in the wild that you see, rather than DC fast, because DC fast, it's an enormous investment, and property owners have been hesitant to plunk down $500,000, $800,000 until electric vehicle adoption was really high. So that's why you see the predominantly in public ChargePoint network or level 2, because they cost a lot less to install. There you go, Rich.
Yeah, so I think, Tom, great point. So I think, so we sell hardware and software to help businesses electrify. And then whether that's a country club or it's a, it's a public school or a university or the parking lot of, a federal park, we enable those customers to be able to electrify for whatever business reason they feel like they need to electrify. And then we will provide all the software to be able to manage that for them. So how do they want to set the pricing? Do they want to give it away for free? Do they want to offer a different rate at nighttime than they do at the daytime? We help remit those payments back to them. We help funnel all the different payment types through that charger to be able to resettle back to that customer. So whether it's a WEX fuel card or it's a MasterCard or a Visa or it's a ChargePoint app they're using to pay, we'll remit those payments. So ChargePoint doesn't make any money on electricity whatsoever. And we don't make any money on installation services, installing charging stations. So if we help a customer install that charging station, we pick a big national electrical procurement contractor, an EPC, to perform that work. And we'll help project manage that, and we'll charge the customer for project management. But we're not in the business of just marking up construction for the sake of marking up construction. So our goal is to help customers electrify. Now, are there bad citizens that buy charging stations and leave them in the parking lot and forget them? Yeah, there are. And so we do an enormous amount of work with those site owners, giving them proactive monitoring, tell them that there's something wrong with their station. We can tell when a station is not responsive, or they have a cellular card that's down in there, and they haven't renewed their cloud plan, and we'll work with them. And also, we sell two levels of service to all of our charging customers. We sell an Assure program, which makes us the ability to operate that charging station for them for the sake of uptime, monitoring that charger is always highly available. And if there's something wrong, we'll automatically dispatch someone to repair that charger, whether it's a head unit or a cable, or it's a full replacement. And then we offer Assure Pro, which is a higher level of service, which we use for our fleet customers, which are generally for larger deployments where we do things like on-site parts. We pick big electrical contractors that stock fast-moving parts to support that site. So when you look at kind of our portfolio of our recurring revenue, at the hardware is a one-time sale to that customer. Hopefully it's a multiple-time sale at different sites. But for that one site, it's a one-time sale. And then we have a reoccurring software model to support that customer from a payment, processing, settlement, you know, and setup, and then ongoing visibility of that charger. And then we have an Assure program, Assure Pro, where we use so we can help that customer operate that charger at a really high SLA. And what we find is the customers that take our Assure and Assure Pro programs have extremely high uptime on that charger. The ones that don't see their charger and they don't see how their customers are interacting with it, they're the ones that we would say is a little bit of a bad citizen, right? That they're not participating in the charging experience. So every time a driver logs something on that charger saying, hey, the handle's broken, or the screen is blank, or it won't accept my app, or, you know, this thing's never available, it's, you know, locked behind a fence, but it keeps showing on the map. All of those comments are categorized under that customer's profile, under that charger. So then that customer has visibility to that as much as we do. And then we actually spend a ton of time working with those site owners saying, hey, listen, this isn't working. You're not getting the value out of this. Then we have to make a decision whether that charging station stays on the network or not. So, you know, it's not our asset. We don't control it. I can't go rip it out of the ground and replace it without getting permission from the site owner, unless they have one of our support programs. So that is kind of the piece of balancing, you know, how should that site owner behave and what was the reason why they want to put in electrification? So yeah, it's definitely frustrating when you have a charger that doesn't work. I'm an EV owner. I did 2,000 miles last week with my wife. We went down to Florida for 4 days. My son plays college sports to go watch him play. And then, you know, we had a couple of charging stations that just didn't work on the way down.
What do you drive real quick?
I got a Mach-E.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So I was actually trying to put it in the picture. I can only get the treetop on there. So yeah, we've had a Mach-E. We got one of the first early Mach-Es. We have the premium extended range.
Okay.
The all-wheel drive one. So I'm probably 270 miles worth of range. But in the winter, you know, it was 21 degrees that weekend. So the batteries really didn't warm up till we got south. But, you know, I stayed at a hotel, a DoubleTree down in Orlando last weekend. And they had two, you know, which looked like 15-year-old chargers that didn't work. And I couldn't get the hotel to reset the breaker. So I had no place to charge. So we end up walking down the street to SeaWorld, trying to find a charger in a parking lot and leaving the car there all night. So we had enough battery to make Daytona. But yeah, that stuff's really frustrating.
So you know how real a struggle is then.
Yeah. And I was trying to chase the general manager of the hotel saying, you know, when you're going to replace these chargers. So I definitely see it on both sides.
All right. I know a guy.
Yeah. I know a guy. So let me pull up a comment really quick. I don't know if you can pull the comments up, sure. Dom, but Doug Grinberg's just posted, ChargePoint needs to be more proactive to prevent constant brand reputation damage. Now, Doug, I'm actually a ChargePoint site host. I've had ChargePoint chargers on my property. I have a commercial property in New Jersey for 11 or 12 years now. I have a level 2 and a DC fast charger. So I could tell you when a customer reports that one of my stations isn't working, or even if it just stops working, I get an email from ChargePoint that says there's a problem with your charger. And then sometimes I get a phone call that somebody calls me and says, you know, your DC fast charger is sending a signal, or we lost the signal, it's not communicating. Would you like us to dispatch somebody? So, I mean, other than that, what do you want them to do? ChargePoint doesn't own the equipment. I own the equipment. They can't come out and service it. There's nothing they can do. It's my private property. They alert me that there's an issue. And now it's up to me to decide, do I want to fix it, or do I just want my property to have a charging station that doesn't work? So, yep. You know, I mean, I'm a long time. Actually, I just sold the property, but I've owned the just like last week. But I've owned that property with ChargePoint charging station. I actually had the first CCS public DC fast charger in the state of New Jersey installed back. The CPE is at 100, Rich.
This, yeah.
The
right when
you first introduced those back in 2014, I want to say like June of 2014. And I've had it ever since. And you know, in the beginning it was a little unreliable, but that wasn't, you know, it was made by IES, and we got a couple modules replaced, and it's been for the last, you know, 6-7 years, it's been working just fine. It's a low power DC fast charger, but for the use where I was in a little shopping mall, it was perfect for that type of set. You get about 100 miles of range for every hour of charging, which is fine for like local driving. It wasn't along a major corridor. But the point I'm getting to is, you know, that's why I wanted to explain ChargePoint's business model right up front. You know, if you go to an Electrify America charging station, for instance, and it's not working, call Electrify America. It's their chargers. It's their equipment. They're responsible for keeping it working. But when a ChargePoint charger isn't working, yes, you can call ChargePoint and report it. You can leave a comment in the app, but there's nothing ChargePoint can do at that point, unless Rich said the customer has the Assure plan that pre-authorizes ChargePoint to proactively go out and fix broken charging stations.
Yep.
So that's why I wanted to get this right out in front and talk about the difference. There's a huge difference in ChargePoint's business model with some of the other networks. Now, they're not the only ones that sell equipment and manage it, but Rich, you are the biggest national company that has that business plan. And I think people don't realize that there's very little you can do beyond asking the customer to fix their charging station. Now, on that note, I want to jump to another topic that's a big problem right now. The charging stations the cellular card that are inside them, Rich?
Yeah.
Just this month, the cellular networks retired 3G, is it?
Yeah.
And
right. So
most of the charging stations have 3G communication cards in them, the older ones at least. I know mine did. I had to now have ChargePoint come out and update the heads, which I'm waiting on because they were backordered, the parts. So all of a sudden, like thousands of charging stations stop working this month. And if they don't get upgraded with 5G cards, they're not going to work. And it's not an inexpensive upgrade. So talk a little bit about that. And, you know, I went through the last wave of upgrades. I had 2G heads, and I had to have you guys come out 5 years ago. When is it?
Yep.
And upgrade them to the current heads that they have. Now I'm upgrading them again. So, you know, why does a property owner want to deal with that? You know, so talk a little bit about that.
You know, it's interesting, Tom, you brought that up. So like in my old position at Ryder, this isn't unique to the charging business either. In my old position at Ryder, I was the chief technology officer, and we had telematics on all the vehicles. We had 250,000 vehicles of telematics, and we had to do a 2G to 3G upgrade, you know, years ago. and I remember having to coordinate, you know, 250,000 vehicles across 800 locations, trying to figure out how we're going to switch out all the SIM cards in the vehicles. And then here we are right on 3G to 4G. I guess the good news is, you know, from a telecom standpoint, 4G is going to take us a really long way, right, in the industry.
They said that about 3G.
I know. Now we have 5G. Now we have 5G, which we are working with the telecom companies on giving access to 5G and the chargers. But yeah, that muck upgrade is very frustrating for a site owner. So we offered to all of our site owners to be able to help coordinate that upgrade on every single charger in North America that needed that muck upgrade. And the client, you know, had a pretty deep discount to be able to do that. So we've been hammering that with our customers. I can tell you the ones that get it done the fastest are the ones with the highest usage, because they see the value that they get out of having the EV stations in their facilities. And then of course, on the fleet side, behind the fence, you know, those customers rely on that every single day to be able to deliver and operate. So they were, you know, that was like a quick conversation that, hey, we got 10 stations that need to be done in the yard. They're like, well, can you be here tomorrow? I think the difference is I think what I realized from being here for just over a year and being an EV driver is I didn't realize until a couple months ago on how much influence I had on that site owner. And you know, I was telling Dominic in Utah around my story around the Orlando hotel. I mean, I was hounding that property manager around, you know, you can't do this. You can't have someone come here and spend $200 a night in a room and have, you know, four broken AC chargers. This doesn't fly right now. There's too many drivers that rely on that to sleep here. And you know, I'm going to use that spot. And the minute my car is full, I'm going to put it in the parking lot to free it up for another EV driver, because I want to be considerate for the drivers that are also on that property. So I think what you're going to see is, as adoption picks up and you see more vehicles, you know, coming into the market, that demand is going to be higher and higher in those kind of non-core use cases, not feeling inconvenience, you know, not in a high traffic area, where you're going to see station owners starting to pop up in different retail environments. The EV driver has an enormous amount of influence on where they spend their money and the feedback that they give to those site owners. And I would tell you that, you know, I read CSIs all weekend, you know, from my fleet customers and my big customers on the municipal side. And I take those comments really, really seriously. And I go back to those site owners and say, listen, do you see what's coming across? Because this isn't good. So we're gonna work really, really hard on continuing to figure out what is the way to off-ramp those bad citizens. So we take the decals off the charger so they don't say charge point anymore. Do we ask a third party to take them over? Does someone else want to own those? Because they made a decision in their retail parking lot where they don't want to support them anymore. The worst thing to do is to give up on infrastructure that's been put in the ground. Someone spent a lot of money on that. And, right. And if it's a viable area to charge, we should be able to find ways to support those chargers.
No, I agree. And I always say you can always tell the pioneers by the arrows in their backs.
Yeah.
The thing is that people that installed the early charging stations, some of these properties that maybe you sold them on at 10, 8, 9 years ago, they saw very low utilization. Yeah. There were very little EVs out there. So after a year or two, they said, geez, you know, like one person a week uses this thing. And I spent $10,000 to have it installed. And the revenue is like $5 a week. You know, I'm why should I just keep pouring money in this? Someone broke a connector and now they're saying it's $600 to replace the cable and put in a connector on. I won't get $600 in 600 years of using this. But the thing is, now adoption is expanding and the utilization rates are going way up. I wonder if there's a way that you could communicate to some of these legacy charge point station owners that and show them how utilization is increasing and say, you know, we know you installed this years ago. You haven't had it functioning in years, but I just, you know, want to, you know, let you know that, you know, if the station's working now, you're going to see much higher utilization in the past. I wonder if ChargePoint could even offer them some kind of carrot to get those stations back up and running, maybe offer to repair it for free or something like that. Yep. And say, look, you know, we're sure you're going to see that if the world is different now than when you installed it 8 years ago. Because I could remember, you know, I made like once every couple of days, somebody would plug in my stations and I was so happy when I saw an EV there. But now, like the last year, it was crazy. Every day, multiple users were plugging into both the DC and the level two. So that would inspire me to keep them working. Whereas 4 or 5 years ago, if I wasn't in this business, if I wasn't an EV advocate and reported on this stuff, I probably wouldn't have fixed them either. I would have said, geez, what a terrible decision. I spent 10 grand on the thing and it brings in $10 a week.
Right.
So could you do something to get those legacy stations working? Is ChargePoint even thinking about that?
Yeah. And you see that, you know, again, when someone's made that investment, the worst thing to do is waste the investment around the infrastructure and the charger. And even the charger, if it's outdated, you know, we'll work with customers on a rip and replace of a newer charger, including a Sure package around that for the next 5 years. So don't have to worry about it. I think that the thing that customers are now learning is you need some level of support around this charger that is provided by us, not by them, because it's not their core business. So if you're giving this as an amenity for your customer base, then why not spend the couple of extra bucks to have an Assure program wrapped around it, so you know that you're going to have uptime and you have someone like ChargePoint, you have one throat to choke around maintaining that charger, because that's what we do for a living. And our goal is to make it as cost effective as possible to operate that charger, to give your customers the highest possible uptime, and give an easy way for your customers to come to us when they have a problem, not go and chase you around the hotel like I was doing. Because if it was a ChargePoint charger in Orlando, I would have called ChargePoint. But this was, I don't even know what this was, a Siemens charger from 8 years ago without even a sticker on it. So I didn't even know who to call. So I had to go chase, you know, the general manager for the hotel. So I think those are some of the things. And we talk about this all the time when we look at our customer base, you know, around who's renewing cloud plans. And it's a very high renewal rate of those that have our support programs. So they see the value in it right out of the bat. The ones that don't get the support programs tend to be the ones that are, you know, probably struggling to maintain the health of their charging station. So, you know, we're always looking to work with customers on what is the best way to support them the easiest. So we don't want them to have to run this process. They should be running their business, whether right. it's a park or a hotel or it's a, you know, a restaurant or wherever they want to put charging. Because it gives the customers the best decision, the best experience, and that's where they're going to spend their money.
Is there a possibility of making the Assure program like standard part? Like, you know, if you buy from ChargePoint, this is the package. It comes, you know, standard with the package.
Yeah, I'm sure we would. That'd be great.
Is there like a huge difference in the take rate of that package?
It's not a big price difference. I think what some customers think is, hey, it's a piece of hardware. If something goes wrong, I'll call the 1-800 number and I'll get it fixed. I'll pay by the drink. And we've seen this in every business, right? That a customer thinks they want to be a self-maintainer. And that comes with a lot of responsibility, especially if it's not your core business. So we strongly encourage customers to get our Assure program so they have access to our call center, diagnostics. We're doing everything for them. You know, and we've had customers that come back after the fact that want to add it, you know, after they have the charger for a year or 2 years. Okay. And we're happy to do that because it takes a lot of pressure off the customer.
So just one more piece of the reliability puzzle. So now when something goes down at a good customer's place, are you experiencing any issues with this, all the supply chain problems that are going on right now? Because like other networks are having, you know, cabinets fail. They need parts. They can't get parts because of, you know, supply chain issues around the world.
So I would say on our own chargers, no. So on our own chargers that we support AC through DC, we have our own field replaceable units. We have our own spare parts packages that come with those chargers. We're not running into issues maintaining our own chargers. We don't have parts availability problems on our own chargers. You know, okay. I think to a certain extent, you know, if it's a weird cable length that, you know, is not something that was in stock that we built custom, they're probably going to get a standard cable right now because, you know, there are supply chain shortages when it comes to stuff like that. But I think for the most part, if we know we're reported that a charger is broken, we're able to fix that charger, whatever the type, AC or DC.
Cool. So we didn't talk about this much with other charging companies, but you have a background in the trucking industry, and that's someplace that ChargePoint is active. So mm-hmm. you do maybe installations at depots, what you call behind the fence, I believe.
Yep.
So maybe you can talk a little bit about what you see as the future of like heavy trucking charging. Is it like are we going to see more of this just at the depot, or like alongside the interstate, so like we traditionally see like refueling for trucks and yeah. And what kind of level of charging do you think, so if we had that like off interstate kind of charging, do you see like megawatt chargers going in, or 2 megawatt chargers, or what kind of power levels do you think?
Sure. So I think what we're seeing right now is in I was at the Work Truck Conference in Indianapolis last week. You know, what we've seen is now fleet operators are now realizing there's never been more options to how to fuel than there is now. So when they look at behind the fence, so like in a depot or in a, you know, delivery yard where they're doing final mile, or behind a building where they're loading their vehicles for the day. You know, there's never been an opportunity to fuel, you know, over a long duration. So we look at kind of deployments right now on that final mile, middle mile, it's typically AC charging, long dwell time, being able to efficiently distribute that energy across all those vehicles. That is the most effective way to fuel light duty vehicles, right? Slow and low.
Okay.
And then we incorporate opportunity charging behind the fence, where you do have a mix of DC. So when a vehicle comes back and it's got to immediately go back out again, or, you know, the driver didn't plug in the vehicle. And I have a great example for that. But when a driver doesn't plug in a vehicle, do they have access to DC so they can quickly charge and make their route? So the goal behind the fence is the job of that vehicle is to do its job and deliver goods and service. So you never want to impede that from happening. So what we're seeing is a really good mix of AC and DC behind the fence. So right now, what we're seeing is the biggest problem with fueling electric vehicles in the fleet scenario is the driver forgets to plug the vehicle in. That's the kiss of death in transportation, because the next morning, you know, it's not like a diesel vehicle or a gas vehicle. You can just throw 50 or 60 gallons in and you're off to your route. So then you really need to do a DC charging. There's a longer dwell time because it takes more time than an overnight charge. So when you look at that, so we've built into our software on the fleet side of the business behind the fence. So if that driver comes into that yard and he or she, you know, is starving, they haven't eaten all day. So they run into lunchroom or they have to use the restroom. They get real close to the charging station, but they forget to plug it in. So we've now built into our software a way to notify that fleet manager that that vehicle's in your yard and it's in proximity to a charger, but it's not being charged. So they can start to see kind of all those preventative things that they need to do to be able to run their fleet. And the goal is for that vehicle to be at the state of charge to make its delivery. So we've done a lot of work with the big fleet providers on giving them the same tools that they're used to having on their diesel business and their gas business. So telematics integration, being able to bring in their scheduling systems, being able to incorporate fuel cards like WEX so it flows through their system properly. The goal around electrification on the fleet side is not to have to change your current systems just because you brought in a couple of electric vehicles in your fleet. And all of our software development goes with that understanding to support those fleets. I think in the case of off-highway charging, so yeah, I think in the future, you're going to see a need for high power charging off the highway, just like you do on diesel and gas right now at the big truck stops. The question is going to be is how quickly does the adoption move from, you know, return to home every day that vehicle goes out, makes its routes, come back to its depot. Typically, that vehicle is only interacting with the customers and back at the depot. How long before those vehicles start doing longer routes, which is going to require them to fuel mid route because they're going someplace over 300 miles or over 200 miles or over 150 miles one way? That's going to be the question on what level of charging do you need, and where does it need to be? And I think there's some logical places. I think what you'll see is large business parks that support the big commercial real estate companies, the big warehouses. I think you'll see centralized charging depots in those first before you see off highway because of the level of investment and offtake you're going to need to be able to offset that investment. But I think you're going to see a mix of charging solutions.
Okay. So these heavy duty trucks have like huge battery packs up to like 500 kilowatt hour battery packs. So what kind of power levels do you envision being able to distribute?
So I think right now where we are in the industry at 350 kW liquid cooled, that's a lot of juice even for a 400 kW battery pack. So the idea of a 20 minute charge or a 10 minute charge at a megawatt charging standard, again, do I think we get there someday for on route? Yeah, I think. But I think a couple of things to take in consideration is, do you view electric class 8 as a practical over the road piece of equipment? Do you want that vehicle doing 300 or 400 miles a day over the road? So that's going to be more of the question than the technology. The technology will certainly catch up. I know everyone talks about megawatt charging because it is, you know, first off, I don't want to be the first one charging that vehicle on the first megawatt charging. Someone else can do that. But I think it's really interesting. I think 350, 500 is kind of that range you're going to see on the really upper end to kind of where we are right now. You know, there's all kinds of new technology that's going to come out on how energy is distributed to that vehicle on the fleet side too, right? We do pantograph on buses right now. You're going to start to see, you know, some level of inductive for autonomous vehicles behind the fence. So you're going to have yard tractors that are autonomous in the future, managing a very tight yard. There's not a lot of people. They're moving trailers around. You don't need someone to come and physically plug that yard tractor in. You're going to have some type of inductive, or you're going to have some type of pin charging on those vehicles.
So I was thinking about this earlier when we were talking, and you're talking about depot. So when a truck comes into like a FedEx building or any kind of building, really, you know, backs up to a loading bay, there's an opportunity for an inductive charging beneath the trucks and those bays at that time, because that's like a prime opportunity to, you know, and it's going to be aligned to in a certain place, so it's kind of a standardized location. Is that so? Do you have any inductive charging plans in the future cemented already, because it's still kind of cutting edge?
Yeah,
and sort I of think technology.
We'll support any type of hardware. So when you look at our charging station, that all that charging station does is figure out how it's going to deliver energy to its endpoint. So whether it comes in the form of inductive or pin or pantograph, we don't care. We'll test with all of them and help support all of them. So it's a matter of the connection between the charging station that's doing the power conversion and the delivery method. So inductive, pantograph, or pin. You know, we'll interact with all of those and support those for our customers. The goal for us is to deliver the lowest cost of charging for our customers, whatever device they want to use as their endpoint. It's just a different, instead of a CCS, it's a pin. Instead of a J1772, it's a plate. Instead of, you know, having a CCS1, it's a pantograph. You know, it's really the relationship between the charger, the control box that controls the communication with that device. So I think it's wildly interesting to see all the technology out there, but nothing scares me that it's something that we're not going to be able to interact with or support our customers with.
Okay. And just to make it clear, pantograph is like a overhead charging on the roof kind of thing that comes down to like a lot of some buses, I think, use it.
Yep. So there's either a power down version where the pantograph comes down to the vehicle, or there's a pantograph up where when the vehicle pulls up, the pantograph comes up from the vehicle and touches the charging receptacles.
Okay. That's interesting.
So kind of like an old trolley charging without the wires.
Right.
So Rich, I remember I wrote an article earlier this year, I guess it might've been late last year, I'm not sure, about ChargePoint partnering with 7-Eleven to install charging at like 700 7-Eleven locations. Now, I don't know if this is something you're familiar with, that program or not, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about where that is at this point, because I know there's none in my area here at 7-Elevens, and I was looking forward to seeing them. I think convenience stores are great locations for DC fast chargers because, you know, it's you know, by the time you plug in, especially on these newer vehicles, if they're high-powered DC fast chargers, you go inside, you grab a cup of coffee, use the restroom, you know, you maybe walk around for 5 minutes or so, and you come out, you know, 15, 20 minutes has passed. And with today's EVs, you know, that could add a couple hundred miles of range. So where are we at with those, and what type of equipment is being installed at the 7-Eleven locations?
We don't have to just talk about 7-Elevens, because maybe you have some other partners in that same sort of space. So,
Yeah, so I can't talk specifically about the 7-Eleven deployment. That's my counterpart on the commercial side would be able to kind of go into how many stores have been deployed and, you know, where are they in the U.S. on the map. What I can tell you is the vast majority of deployments on the fuel and convenience side have been that what we talked about, the 62.5 kW chargers that were paired to 130. And reason for that on those small footprint areas, like in fuel and convenience, where there's more convenience than there is fuel, is because of the footprint that they take up is extremely small. You're not sacrificing parking spots to be able to deploy at those types of retail convenience customers. So I think what you're going to see is, depending on the space that retailer has, it's going to really determine what type of charging they want to lay out. And I think what you're looking at, what we're seeing from the big retailers on the convenience side is, you know, do they want to incorporate that charger into their reward program? Do they want to give free charging away if you use, you know, your QR code on your app for whatever brand that is? A lot of the conversations that we're having is more around the customer experience that they want to drive by having charging at their location. You know, are there places that you're going to, you know, I'm always looking for where's the most convenient place for me to fuel when I'm on the road too, right? And it's always not something, you know, right off the highway, you know, because I'm not always on the highway. We're in, you know, different towns across the U.S. where I don't want to go back to a major highway and go try and find a major big box retailer to find charging. I want to find more local charging. And I think on those, I'm willing to take a little bit of the slower speed and not have to rely on 150 and 350, knowing that I have a little bit more time. I don't have to jump right back on the highway in 10 minutes, you know, to make it another 270 miles to my next charging station. So like last weekend, I went from here to Daytona to Orlando, Orlando to Tampa, and Tampa all the way back to Atlanta. You know, my only concern was where were the most convenient, highest power charging stations I could find, you know, with the exception of, you know, when we're, you know, in Huntsville, my son goes to college up there. We're looking for where are the hotel chargers and where are the retail chargers that we can use because we're there for a couple of days and I'm not doubling back all the way to a highway. So I think there's a good mix that you're going to see on the consumer preferences.
That's true. That's not, we were talking about that earlier. We had a guest on a few weeks ago who really saw the future as like a lot of like gas stations, sort of high power DC charger, you know, but you see a future with like a lot more different, a lot more modalities like at hotels.
Yeah.
I don't know if you do street side with municipalities.
Yeah, there's a little bit of street side on the AC side right now.
Okay.
I think a couple of municipalities have rolled it out and, you know, where they do a curb cut and a little bit where they have the space available. You know, and what they're doing is they're doing it close to where their municipality is, you know, where in their city center. You know, this is what we're seeing across the U.S. right now is they're trying to keep it as close to their centralized areas as possible. And then when you have more space, you're seeing parks and, you know, you're seeing gyms and you're seeing stuff that's a little bit more off the beaten path. Right. You know, street parking is interesting when you look at it, right? It's probably the biggest obstacle that we have as an industry is, you know, for me, someone that has a house, you know, to put an AC charger in my home isn't that hard, right? I did a little bit of wiring. I called in a contractor and, you know, I have a charger in my driveway.
You have a driveway.
Yeah. I kind of take that for granted.
Right.
For people that are in multifamily, you know, high rise apartments, you know, it's tough to be able to deploy charging. So we look at some of the major ways that we can work with either the real estate owners that own those buildings, the property managers, or, you know, some of the partners that we work with that can help deploy charging on the multifamily side. And we have some really good options for deploying charging at multifamily, because I think that's the piece that starts to get you over the hump. So, I mean, guys, I'm just like probably you guys, 90% of my charging is done at home, yeah. And 10% is done on the road if you look at all my usage. And that's what we see. On the fleet side, you know, we're going to see a ton of the charging on the depot behind the fence and only a very small portion, you know, over the road. So I think you'll see that. But, you know, we are really working hard at how can we make electrification easy no matter where you live or where you work or where you have to charge. That's the part that we have to overcome for the industry to make it accessible to everyone.
So speaking of making charging easy, where is ChargePoint at with like more frictionless billing and charge initiation programs like Plug and Charge? Is that something that you...
Yeah, so on the DC side, a couple OEMs we're integrated with on Plug and Charge that are on our network right now. So we've done a number of DEN integrations with some major OEMs. You guys, everyone, there's a bunch of public announcements on those. So, you know, that protocol of Plug and Charge is important to the OEMs because it keeps the driver, you know, engaged in that, you know, not have to be engaged in that process. Get out of the car, plug it in. It works through their dash and it kind of flows through. So we've been doing that work with the major OEMs on Plug and Charge. But it's not for everyone, right? And you're going to see it on the delivery vehicle side. Right. You know, a lot of the plug and charge you don't want to work because they're using a fuel card. They have different accounting systems. I think for a consumer, it's great, right? I use it where it's available, but it's not for everyone. So the goal is to have options for customers on how they want to pay and account for that charging. You know, a lot of the fleet customers, they have really, really deep integrations with their fuel card providers that is built into their back end, into their ERP and into their accounting system. And they're looking at that cost of what it costs to deliver those goods and services. They want 100% of the fuel flowing through that vehicle at the vehicle level into their system. So it's the goal is to be able to give them as many different possibilities on how they want to pay for charging as possible.
Yeah. Okay. That's, I want to follow up because I understand your point about commercial, customers and wanting a different type of control over the fueling, but for the average user, they want plug and charge for retail customers.
Yeah.
Is there a goal of having that deployed on public charge point DC chargers at any time in 2022 or
is it's already deployed? Yeah. It's already deployed with a number of OEMs right now.
Okay. So you have a Mustang Mach-E and that is one of the few EVs that currently is plug and charge. So if you go to a DC fast charger on the ChargePoint network in public somewhere, plug and charge works?
On the Mach-E, I don't know. I'll have to check on the Mach-E. I can't remember. I use my ChargePoint app because I want all the record in my app. I don't want it to be sitting on the Ford back end.
I
want to see it on the back end.
Okay. Do you know which vehicles Mercedes-Benz.
Mercedes-Benz, the full DEN integration with Mercedes-Benz, that was announced, I think, probably 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And that's plug and charge at all the charge point stations and everyone on our network.
Nice. Is that just the DC fast charge stations or level two too on charge point network?
So I don't think level two, think there's any plug and charge on level two because there's not a data connection between the vehicle and the AC charger.
Like that's what I thought. You just made it sound like on the charge point network, like it would work.
No, on DC.
From what I understood, it was only
that
on
relationship
DC.
Between the CCS and the vehicle. That mm-hmm. data connection is what allows that plug and charge through the vehicle.
Gotcha.
Right. Right. So the U.S. government is putting $7.3 billion into charging infrastructure over the next few years, with $5 billion of that going to states later this year. Now, government doesn't have the best reputation when it comes to efficiency or efficiently distributing money like that. So how would you like to see the different states allocate these funds? This is more of a high level kind of question, I guess, but so it's likely that this is going to be used for a number of different charging modalities. But if you were the king of all the states, how would you determine the best use of that money?
So I think I can take it from a business perspective. So when we look at it from a business perspective, and I can take this from the policy side in my last 25 years is, we want small and medium businesses to be treated just like big businesses are and have the same access to programs. So mm-hmm. the local fleet customer that has five or six vehicles, that business should be able to take advantage of those programs just like a big business will. So when we look at it from an infrastructure standpoint, if that small business wants to deploy electric vehicles, they should have access to the same funds to be able to offset some of that make ready cost at their facility, just like a big customer should. And that's some of the stuff that we want to make sure that customers have access to. I think on a municipality side, when you look at things like school bus and transit, obviously you want to be able to support that infrastructure where a municipality wouldn't be able to pay for that on their own, out of pocket one time. So when you look at it that way, so what is your town's electrification strategy, your municipality's electrification strategy? And the people that live in that town have an enormous amount of influence of how those dollars are spent. So I think, we all vote for our representatives in our own town. And I'm very vocal on how those dollars should be spent where I live to support either public transportation or support small businesses. So that's the type of stuff that I look at personally on how that money is spent. From a business standpoint, what's fair is the cost to electrify. The vast majority of the cost to electrify is either the infrastructure or the vehicles. The infrastructure lasts a long time. So I feel like the dollars should be spent on helping customers offset the cost of that infrastructure, which is going to be there for 10, 15, 20 years. Right. And small businesses should be able to take advantage of that.
Right. I think this money mostly is for just the infrastructure, and then they have another package of that hasn't gone through Congress yet, as far as like tax credits, renewable tax credits, or whatever.
Yeah.
So Tom, got another question?
Sure. Well, let's talk a little quickly. Yeah, we're pushing up against the end of the hour. So Rich, EVgo was the first DC fast charge network to be allowed to incorporate a Tesla connector to their DC fast chargers. Is that something that ChargePoint has explored? I remember when I was at the CES, I think it was 2017, that was 4 years ago now, or 5 years ago. That's when ChargePoint announced the new Express Plus DC fast charge stations. And, it was at that point, it was like the fastest, highest power charging stations that were going to be employed. And I know talking to ChargePoint representatives at that point, they said they designed that unit. You know, there's two connectors on the top that swivel out. Yep. They designed it to add another stack, so there could be three connectors swiveling out. And, you know, they wouldn't come out and say the T word, but it was obvious they were talking about hopefully being able to add a Tesla connector onto those. That hasn't happened. Is ChargePoint still interested in trying to have a Tesla connector on their DC fast charge equipment? Why is it so hard? Why can't Electrify America and ChargePoint put Tesla connectors on their units also?
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably a little out of my expertise on the fleet area. What I can tell you is, on the fleet standpoint, you know, you're right, Tom. Our chargers are configured to run any cable type. I have chargers right now that run CCS1 and CCS2 because they're doing a yard tractor or something that has a CCS2. Mm-hmm. So I know that our chargers are configured to adopt any cable connector that it wants. I don't know. I can't go into specifics because it's not my area around what is the reason why, you know, we don't have a Tesla connector on every single ChargePoint charger in the United States. You know, what I can tell you is I think the market is starting to develop faster than it has in the last 10 years, certainly. So I think some of those things you're going to see come together over the next couple of years. I think Tesla's done, I was reading some of the comments on the side. Tesla's done a great job with their charging network and infrastructure. I mean, they really led the way on the DC side, given consistent access to customers. So I think when you look at Tesla, they're vertically integrated, their hardware and software, you know, with their vehicles, you know, just kind of how we want to be, you know, from a software and a hardware standpoint. We think our stuff works best together, but then we'll also on-ramp third parties. So I think you're seeing the need to do that before you allow someone else to operate your vehicles because you can't control the customer experience. So I think the worst thing that a non-CCS or non-J1772, you know, provider would say is, you know, I have someone running my cable type and then the charger never works, or, you know, it's broken all the time. So I think, you know, as the network gets better and it becomes more mature, you'll see these come together. I wish I could give you more on that. I don't run the consumer side that deeply around the retail side.
Understood. That's fair. Thank you.
So ChargePoint has seen really good revenue growth this past year, and the forecast, I think, is pretty strong as well. So what kind of position do you see the company as far as like in the marketplace? What kind of market share are you looking at, like 5 to 10 years? Like how competitive do you expect to be?
Yeah, I think that, there's a couple ways to answer that. I think from the revenue growth, you're going to see similar growth rates that we've had on our earnings call, and then we gave projections for next year. More importantly, when you look at the acquisitions that we've done, we've bought businesses that allow us to continue that growth rate in our non-core area. So when you look at, we bought Vericity, which was August of last year, that really allowed me to accelerate in bus, you know, with software and telematics. That was a big acquisition for us, not in dollars, but it was a big acquisition and how we position ourselves in the market, because it broadened my fleet scope. When you look at the has-to-be acquisition we did in Europe, that allowed us to act more as an EMSP, an electric mobility service provider, you know, in Europe. So we're trying to do things that have, you know, enormous synergies with our company, but allows us to continue to develop the market where we see the market moving to. the thing around this business is, where do you anticipate where the customer wants to go next? And can you form your business to be able to support that market? And that's what we're trying to do. So when you look at our service level offerings, when you look at our charger hardware strategy, when you look at the businesses that we're trying to buy, and you look at the support structure that we're putting in place, this is all to figure out where is the customer going to want us to support them next, whether it's commercial, retail, or fleet.
Right. All right. So I think that brings us to the end of today's bonus episode. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a great talk. I wish we had some more time, but this was great.
Yeah, good to see you guys.
And yeah, so if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. Thanks for watching us, by the way. If you'd like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Malogny at Tomolog. That's with two M's. I'm at Dominic_Y. ChargePoint is at ChargePointNet on Twitter. So click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next time.